Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara. We're coming to you from a really neat place. It's Union Place Bar and Grill. It's located at 4884 Chambliss Avenue. And if you're in the area, in fact, it's not too far from our station, but if you're on Kingston Pike near the Kroger, there's a Chick-fil-A there. Go west about a quarter of a mile. You'll take a right, and you will find us at 4884 Chambliss Avenue, Union Place. A really neat location. They got a tremendous menu, a variety of appetizers, a variety of sandwiches, a tremendous burgers here, a lot of great entrees that you can check out. They also have happy hour that goes Monday to Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. with $10 domestic pitchers, $3 domestic bottles, $4 deep Eddie flavored bombs, $4 premium well liquor drinks, $6 queso and chips. And they've got a really neat area for game rooms. They've got darts, a pool table. You can check it out right here at Union Place. And we're here on a Michelob Ultra Golf Getaway remote. And we are going. What you do is you have to come by here. We're going to give you the key word that you have to text. And once you do, here's the deal. You can have a chance to be one of three qualifiers for a tremendous prize. Now, what is that prize? Custom fit set of TaylorMade Sim 2 golf clubs. That's 11 clubs valued at $2,000. That's from Edwin Watts Golf. Also, an Ultra golf bag. That's what's up for grabs. So you come by here. You get the keyword. We'll tell you what that keyword is. You text it to 68255, and then you have your name in the running for a fantastic prize. We're going to give this away April the 30th. April the 30th. So that's what we've got going on here. And our lineup, we are loaded today. So we're going to be joined by Brandon Marcello. He is a National College Football reporter for 247 Sports. He came out with a recent ranking of coaches that he thinks, first-year coaches, that will be most successful. The ranking's interesting. I'd like to get his definition of most successful. At 4:05, we'll be joined by former Lady Vol Michelle Marciniak. She's going to be involved in a race, Pedal for Pat, Alzheimer's. That is going to be coming up Saturday, September the 13th. But they released a press release today announcing the start. And what they're going to do is, the race will start in Nashville. It'll end in Knoxville. They're going to hit several towns within the state of Tennessee. They'll go 600 miles in an effort to raise money for Alzheimer's. And so we look forward to visiting with her. That's 4:05. 4:35, Mike Murray of the Ice Bears. 5 o'clock, Brent Hubbs, VolQuest.com. We'll have a Tennessee football practice report. We'll have an SEC notebook. And we will hear from some Tennessee players that were made available to the media yesterday. Vince Ferrara, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Jimmy Himes. Good to be on with you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic and really excited to be at Union Place. We'll get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters. That's technology you need, people that you can trust. We'll report on a tennis outcome. The Lady Vols tennis team, which upset number 10 LSU yesterday, advanced to the semifinals, lost today to Georgia. It was a sweep, Georgia 4-0. The men's tennis team was taking on number 12, South Carolina. I haven't seen the final results, but Tennessee was ahead based on what I had seen earlier. All right, interesting situation involving the quarterback for Michigan. It had been reported that Joe Milton was transferring to Tennessee. He has told a reporter he's undecided. He's going to pick between Tennessee and Washington State, and he's going to probably announce that Saturday night. Vince, wouldn't it be interesting if he said, look at Washington State, and there's Derek Garantano. Hey, I might go there. Beat that guy out. What are your thoughts on Milton?
That's the first thought that came to mind for me was that, you know, their starter from last year had gotten into some legal trouble, and he's probably looking at it as like, oh, Garantano's there. I can beat that guy and get a gig. And maybe even if that didn't come to mind, is that maybe what Washington State is selling to him, that he's got a great opportunity here and maybe there's not as much traffic in the roadway to get to that starting spot as there is in Tennessee? You know, Washington State is saying, look at all those. They got the incoming freshman. They got three other guys there, blah, blah, blah. So it's interesting that, you know, Pete Thamel, who originally reported, I believe, that Milton was headed to Tennessee, he's usually pretty accurate with his reporting and has been with a lot of Tennessee stuff, but It's an interesting twist to it, and obviously it would. I'm sure Tennessee is doing their best to try to close the deal if that's still the case, or maybe he wanted to. Maybe he's saying that because he wants to wait to make it official and make his own announcement. This would be kind of a delay in that. Who knows?
Well, and I'll say this, and if you're an aggressive reporter and you try to break stories, and I'm one of them, you're going to get misinformation from sources from time to time. I don't care how long you've done it. I've told the story of a head coach at LSU in basketball told me they were hiring an assistant coach. I reported it, and then they didn't hire the guy. Pretty good source, right, the head coach. So sometimes you can get information from sources that good sources that end up not being correct. But we'll see. Milton may end up picking Tennessee anyway. All right, and also, Vince, we've got a poll on 991dsportshandle.com, who will be Tennessee's starting quarterback. Milton's on that list, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Based on the report that was already out there and many people saying it was a done deal. So, yeah, he's one of five quarterbacks in our poll for who you think will be the Vols starting quarterback in the season opener, and it still could very well be Milton. Milton, interestingly enough, is second right now in that poll, and the leader is Harrison Bailey, which is a little bit – excuse me, no, I'm sorry, Hendon Hooker. Okay. Harrison Bailey is closing in. Hendon Hooker had separated himself a little bit. Now Bailey is charging in. Hooker has 32% of the votes. Bailey has surpassed Milton for second place, and he's creeping in. He's only 9 votes behind Hooker at 29%. And then you got Joe Milton third at 19%, Brian Maurer at 16%, and Caden Salter at only 3%. I'm a little surprised based on how many people, a lot of us in the media and beyond, have said that Brian Maurer is having a good camp, and when we put our eyes on him, that he is probably looked the best of the group. It hasn't been a landslide, but I'm surprised that more fans didn't go off of that and said, well, it looks like it's going to be Maurer. So there's still belief in Harrison Bailey and perhaps even more belief in Hendon Hooker. It's close. You can just go to 991thesportsanimal.com. You can scroll in the bottom right, and you'll find the poll there, or go to the trending on the Sports Animal Knoxville section in the middle, and you can find the poll question there and cast your vote however you think. And we'll leave it up there even beyond the spring game, Jimmy, and we'll just see if maybe someone changes their mind and think differently after the spring game.
A little bit later, Vince and I will discuss what we think will happen at the quarterback position. All right, a few other notes out there. I do want to emphasize this. Tim Irwin, the Food City Bass Tournament, it's this Saturday. It's the 32nd annual, and Tim's done he's just a great asset to the community. But they started Saturday at daylight. The weigh-in's at 3 o'clock. It's at Fort Loudoun Lake Teleco Canal. And they have had from 100 to 200 teams have entered this in the past. And they're going to raise about $200,000 this year. And since they have started this, the combined total is going to be close to $1.5 million that they will have raised for the Boys and Girls Club of the Greater Tennessee Valley. First place gets $10,000. So that's coming up this Saturday. And also Knoxville Challenger, which is the most successful challenger on the circuit, they've got a new tournament director. He is Tennessee Vol assistant Ian Van Cott. His co-chairs are Chris Scalette and Laura Burton, but he's taken over for Scott Patrick, who's elected to step aside. The Knoxville Challenger is November 8th through the 14th, and they have raised about $1.5 million over the last decade or so for the Helen Ross McNabb Center. So a new tournament director there. Also, a few other notes bouncing around. Auburn, they get a Charleston transfer named Zepp Jasper, who averaged 15.6 points a game last year. Indianapolis 500, they're going to allow 135,000 fans for their May 30th event. So that's a huge amount. And speaking of attendance, the TSSAA has said that no mask or social distancing is required to attend high school sporting events. Now, they remain recommendations, but you don't have to do it. That decision was made in consultation with the governor's office. Vince, your thoughts on that move by the TSSAA?
Well, I think we're headed in that direction of loosening those things up, and I'm honestly not surprised. I think Tennessee has tried to be forward in maybe not leading the pack in terms of states, but being forward on trying to get back to normalcy. So I'm honestly not surprised by that. Look, high school football seemingly avoided, you know, any huge outbreaks with the way they handled things, and there was no guarantee even with masks and social distancing in the fall. So maybe they used that as a base point to expand out from that.
Also, Willie Mays is – oh, I'm sorry, I skipped a note. I meant to tie in with this. The NCAA is recommending a maximum of 50% capacity for baseball and softball regionals. And I would think, Vince, that's probably not a surprise either.
No, and also for the NCAA, I did not expect them to take the stance so close to – you know, us having restrictions to say, all right, everybody's full go, because I don't, obviously other areas are in a different situation than others that are maybe in a better spot. So it's not surprising that they took the stance of, hey, we're going to put one foot in the water and not jump in with 2 feet right now.
Willie Mays has received the Lifetime Achievement Award from Baseball Digest. He is the first recipient. It obviously is a new award. Willie Mays is one of my favorite players growing up. What an incredible baseball player. A great hitter, great power, hit for average, also an athletic and tremendous center fielder. So nice to see that he is getting that award. Also, NFL replay, they're changing some things. One thing that Vince, maybe you can help me with this. I'm not sure if I quite understood this one, that it's going to be a loss of down if you have multiple forward passes completed behind the line of scrimmage on the same play. Well, what was it before? I mean, what you can't have multiple losses. You can't have multiple forward passes. So we're told Bad Take Andy said it was a 5-yard penalty in the pass instead of just loss of down.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. The loss of down is the extra penalty. It was a penalty, but the loss of down, that's kind of like intentional grounding.
Okay.
Now, I don't see the same kind of intent. Intentional grounding is, it punishes in that way because of the intent to avoid the big play. I think with multiple forward passes behind the line of scrimmage, that to me maybe is just bad execution, you know. So more so than intent to throw it away. And plus, how often does that happen? Like, what are we spending time on these rules that rarely ever happen?
Yeah, it does rarely happen. One thing about the intentional grounding is that, and I don't think all leagues do this. I don't know. Help me out of this, but if you got intentional grounding, if you're 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage, you have an intentional grounding, then it's the spot where you had intentional grounding. So basically, it's right. A 2-yard penalty, loss of down. I think they should add 5 yards to that. I don't think that's penal enough for intentional grounding. So,
yeah, but I mean, how, Jimmy, more often than not, that this is quarterbacks taking deep drops and maybe they're being pressured and bailing out of the back of the pocket. 2 yards, I don't know that they're often doing that because they're throwing it away with 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Then at that point, then you, a lot of times you may just try to run and avoid that. But I think more often than not, it's significant because it's the quarterbacks are deeper in the pocket. I don't have numbers on that. Well, that's just going off of memory.
I'm just giving an example of why. Sure. I don't like it. I mean, yeah, most of them are not 2 yards, but you could be 1 yard or 2 yard behind the line of scrimmage, intentionally ground it, and there's really no penalty to it. That's why I don't like it. Most of the ones I see are in the 5 to 7 yard range. You're in the pocket, you throw it away, you roll out to the right, throw it away. So I just think they should add yards to that. That's my opinion. Do you disagree with that? Do you think it's fine the way it is?
I do think it's fine the way it is. I'd like to see the numbers on it. And if there are plenty of cases where it's, you know, less than 5 yards, then I see your point on that specifically. I just seem to think that there are more significant yards plus that loss of down. Oftentimes that comes on third down as well, which will end the drive for the offense.
Danny Manning, the former Wake Forest coach, is joining the Maryland staff under Mark Turgeon, who used to work at Tennessee. So Danny Manning with the job there. And then Tony Barbee, a former head coach in basketball in the SEC, had been at Auburn. Also, he'd been at UTEP. He's expected to be hired as Central Michigan's coach. So we'll see what happens with that situation. All right, those are news and notes brought to you by Image Matter. All right, a couple of notes out there with the NBA. Steph Curry scored less than 30 points. That becomes news. He had done it 11 games in a row. He had a bad shooting night, 18 points, 7 of 25 last night. He had made 78 threes in an 11-game stretch, and he had averaged right at 40 points during that stretch. So that remarkable streak has come to an end. And then the Knicks, wow, they won 8 in a row. They're 33-27. They beat Atlanta. And Julius Randle had another great game, 40 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists. So he's been playing outstanding. Right now the Knicks are the number 4 seed in the East Division. The Lakers, they're expecting to get Anthony Davis back. When he has scored 25 points in a game this year, the Lakers are 9-0. So certainly important for them to get him back. And then as far as Major League Baseball, Oakland winning their 11th game in a row. They started 0-6. They're the first team in Major League Baseball history to have an 0-6 start, followed up by winning 11 in a row. They beat the Twins, which gave it to them. The Twins had two errors in the bottom of the 10th inning to hand Oakland a 13-12 victory. And then in the NBA, there are several undeclared players who are projected to go pretty high in the draft. Vince, I want to get your take on these guys. A couple of them. First off, Franz Wagner of Michigan and Corey Kispert of Gonzaga. Do you think those guys are returning to college?
Well, I think for Kispert, he has an opportunity. Actually, both of them will be national championship contenders. Those are 1 and 2 in the recruiting rankings. So both of them have opportunities to look at their rosters and say, man, I have another chance to win a national championship next year. And so I think it is similar for both. I think Kispert, to me, I'm a little surprised that he hasn't already declared. But that roster is just so loaded that it has to be maybe more enticing for him and Wagner to return and try to win a championship. So I don't have any insight on whether those guys will come back. I would be maybe a little bit more surprised at Kispert because of his shooting ability. I think the NBA will think highly of him, and Wagner as well. But I think it's different for them because of how good those teams will be next year.
Yeah, I agree with that. And so another one, Jared Butler from Baylor. He is undeclared. He's ranked the number 19th player in this group. Do you think Butler comes back?
I would say no. When you do what they did in winning a title and play as well as he did and show the toughness and the shooting ability and defense, I would think that it's hard to go out on a higher level. And again, Baylor will be really good at next year also, so that's a similar situation. But I would be a little bit surprised if he does come back.
Yeah. And then Max Abmas, who is a nation's leading scorer, he's on this list as well. He's listed at number 38. Now, these are where they were projected to be taken in the draft is what this particular list showed.
Right.
At 38, I don't know if he's going to improve his stock any. I don't know. Maybe if you lead the nation in back-to-back years, you improve your draft stock. Not sure. But he's another one that was on that list of really good players that have not declared that have the opportunity certainly to do so. All right. Also, another quick note. At Arkansas, they have lost a key wide receiver, Mike Woods. Woods averaged 19.3 points per game. That was third in the SEC, the Jalen Waddle, who played less than half the season, and Kenny Yebo, who was the Ole Miss tight end. And it was kind of surprising because of the offense at Arkansas. The feeling was this guy could come in with Trevon Burks and have another really good season. But Arkansas would have been the only team in the SEC with two wide receivers with at least 660 receiving yards had Woods return. Woods said it's not an indictment on head coach Sam Pittman, a new wide receiver coach. He just wants a change of scenery. So we will see what happens and where he ends up. God, there's so many people in the transfer portal, it's kind of hard to keep up with it. So, and then another note, as far as the there were 323 people that actually had an invite to the NFL Combine that wasn't hell, but the majority of those did make it to one of the 103 pro days that were held mostly at college campuses around the country. So, and it is, we'll never know the answer to this, but you do wonder who might have been helped, who might have been hurt by going to a combine, whether that's through the workout or through the interviews. But we'll never know that. We'll see with the draft coming up later this month. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Brandon Marcello. He is with 247 Sports, a national college football reporter. He came out with the list of the first-year coaches that he thinks will be the most successful in the country. He's got the Vanderbilt coach ranked at 6. He's got the Tennessee coach at 13. Thought that was pretty interesting. We come to you from Union Place Bar and Grill, located at 4884 Chambliss Avenue. It's the Michelob Ultra Golf Giveaway, better than a birdie. Your chance to come by here. Find out what the keyword is that you can text to 68255, and that puts you in the running for a brand-new Ultra golf bag and a custom-fit set of TaylorMade Simtu golf clubs valued at $2,000, compliments of Edwin Watts Golf. Pleased now to be joined by Brandon Marcello with 247 Sports, our national college football reporter. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for joining us. Gosh, if I'm not mistaken, I believe I remember seeing you down at the SEC spring meetings. We don't get to go down there again for the second year in a row, do we?
No, it's been a while. You know, it's been 2 years, I guess. It's kind of crazy. I do wonder if we'll ever see Destin again for the spring meetings. I wonder if they'll just do all this virtually and maybe in person in Birmingham from now on.
Gosh, I hope not. I've enjoyed my trips to Destin. That's a bad idea. I do want to ask you this. So I saw an article that you wrote where you rated first-year coaches who you think will be the most successful. Give me your criteria on how you selected these coaches. What was the makeup of that?
Yeah, what I did is I took – these aren't like coaches that are like, oh, this guy's going to win double digits. This is expectations within the own program and whether they can meet those or maybe exceed them considering the circumstances they inherit. So, obviously, like a Will Hall at Southern Miss, a little bit different there than, say, you know, Gus Malzahn maybe at UCF or Andy Avalos. Obviously at Boise State where they're accustomed to winning double-digit games or at least 8 or 9 games a year. So that was kind of the criteria I utilized. And considering those circumstances within each program, I picked the top 10 guys of these first-year coaches that I think will end up having the most success their first year.
I'm sure everybody on Twitter agreed with your opinions, right? That's the way you use the words.
Oh, of course, man. Always.
You had Malzahn number one. So he goes to Central Florida, inherits a pretty good situation, left behind by Josh Heupel, who's at Tennessee. Why did you take Malzahn number one there?
Yeah, like you said, it's a pretty cush gig considering the circumstances. I mean, he comes in to get Dylan Gabriel at quarterback. I mean, goodness gracious, they're pretty loaded. I think they might drop off a little bit, actually, in 2022, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. He comes into a situation where, listen, last year was a little bit of a disappointment, but also it was a weird year just because of COVID, but also some injuries they underwent. But he returns a lot of talent there, and he's a guy that, for whatever reason, even since he was in high school, when he goes into a job his first year, like that excitement and the newness to it all, he always gets those teams to kind of overperform from their expectations. And the most recent one was, of course, 2013 at Auburn when he took them to the national championship game after losing like 10 or 11, maybe 12 SEC games in a row. So it'll be interesting to watch what he does there. But, you know, the transfer portal is kind of where he's making his hay and filling some spots here in the early going of his tenure. He got former players for him at Auburn and Nate Craig Myers, a receiver, running back Mark Anthony Richards, to fill some holes. And, you know, listen, that offense ranked 8th nationally in points per game. last season, and I don't know if they'll get back up to that point this upcoming year, but they scored 35 points a game this season in the AAC. They'll be challenging for double-digit wins once again.
Brennan, you have Josh Heupel outside of the top 10 at 13. Is a big part of that the expectations that come with this Tennessee job, regardless of what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those situations where, I mean, sometimes you lose sight of things when you're not focusing on the horizon a little bit, looking far in the distance. Because for Tennessee right now, that's where fans should be looking, is to the horizon in the future, 2-3 years down the road, especially with this NCAA cloud hanging over the program and what they're trying to figure out at quarterback. I mean, they obviously have no idea what they're going to do at quarterback right now after just trying to go after Joe Mixon there from Michigan. So all that said, fans probably expect somehow, some way for them to be above 500 this upcoming season. I don't see that happening. I think it'll maybe be close if they can overperform a little bit. There's just too much going on right now, and then with the roster and trying to figure out the quarterback situation. But I'm sure some Tennessee fans would sit there and go, well, the quarterback situation obviously has to be better than it has been the last 2 or 3 years. Well, not so fast. I mean, you know, Josh Heupel's obviously not, sold on who's going to be the quarterback right now, and I think that's a big reason why he went after Joe Mixon at Michigan.
Well, this might be more of a bigger picture thought on the two coaches, but who do you think upgraded their head coaching situation more, Tennessee with Heupel from Pruitt or UCF going to Malzahn from Heupel?
Man, that's a great question. I'm going to go with Heupel because Heupel at Tennessee, because you're looking at a situation where Heupel's still early in his career as a head coach. I've always liked him and saw what he's able to do just with the offenses. I mean, everybody there at Tennessee knows what he did at Mizzou and getting that offense back on its feet and becoming one of the top offenses in the country. And then UCF to come in after Scott Frost, where easily someone could have fell on their face a little bit, and he didn't. He kept it going, and he kept scoring points, which is what he's known for. So I think with Tennessee, you're getting a coach who is still early in his career, is still learning some things, but is obviously still successful early in that tenure. With Gus Malzahn, I mean, you could look at the resume and everything and say, hey, you know, this guy has more credentials, obviously. He's played for national championships and all that, but – you know, let's face it, his last 3 years, or 2.5 years, I should say, at Auburn were very stale, very predictable on offense, and the recruiting started going down a little bit, and it makes you wonder if he's in the twilight of his career. Now, the other storyline with that is, well, Gus Malzahn was being hampered by, you know, people behind the scenes and what he could or could not do, including with play calling. But at some point, a coach, when they're a coach, they lose that edge a little bit. And, you know, there's that question with Gus Malzahn. I mean, he's been a Power 5 head coach, you know, for 8 seasons, and maybe that was all that was really – we've seen the best out of him already, whereas with Heupel, I think the best is yet to come.
Our guest, Brandon Marcella with 247 Sports. Brandon, you've got Clark Lee, first-year coach, Vanderbilt, number 6, versus Heupel. What do you see out of Vanderbilt in his first year under Lee?
Well, I see a win. after going 0-9, it's kind of incredible, as much as we look at Vanderbilt and go, man, that program has historically been bad, but that was the first winless season for them in a long – I guess it was the first ever, but if I go back and look. But and the first by an SEC team since 1999 when South Carolina finished winless. So for Vanderbilt, I mean, listen, this is not going to be a gig where he's automatically winning 5 or 6 games or even 4 games. I think they win maybe 2 or 3 this year, which would be a marked improvement from last season, even with, you know, listen, the non-conference season coming back into it, which offers some more winnable games. But for Clark Lee and Vanderbilt, that's a job much like Heupel at Tennessee, where you're not really going to be able to judge the job he's doing until probably year 3. Which a lot of coaches could say that and would want that, but in the SEC, you don't get that unless it's just completely dire circumstances like Vanderbilt's in right now. So I think they win 2 or 3 games, which the expectations going in would probably be 1 or 2 games. Maybe he exceeds that a little bit, and it doesn't sound like much, but winning three games is a lot different than winning just one game or even two games, because that means you're potentially going in there and maybe knocking off an SEC team or two. But maybe they even go above that three win. Who knows?
You got Brian Harrison at number five. He's at Auburn. Do you have him rated that high because you like him as a coach, or do you think he inherits a pretty good situation at Auburn?
Yeah, he's a great coach, number one, but also he's got a pretty good defense with him. And with Derek Mason leading that group, I think they're going to do pretty well defensively. I mean, you could say what you want about him at Vanderbilt, including, you know, the defenses he put together those last couple of years. But all the reviews I keep hearing from people there is that he's done a fantastic job in putting the players at the right spot. Their one weakness right now might be in the middle of the defensive line, but they've got some really dynamic playmakers, including Derek Hall as a pass rusher, and they got some very good linebackers. And then offensively, I kind of look at it like this. I think that offense last season was the worst it could have been considering the pieces they had, and it was part of the reason why Gus Malzahn got fired. Not that he won six games, but that the offense just looked completely stale and had made no improvements under Bo Nix those first couple of years. And plus, and add to that, it may have actually gotten worse. With Brian Harsin, they're going to be a little bit multiple with Mike Bobo calling the plays, but Harsin's going to be in control of that offense. They're changing things around. And more importantly, Bo Nix is being reprogrammed in a way that will make him a better quarterback just by default, because really it was almost like, you know, it's like trying to teach a kid to play catch and having one throw with him outside as your dad and then leaving him on his own going, if you figure the rest out. That's kind of the situation Bo Nix was in, because he didn't get a lot of development under Gus Malzahn those first 2 years. And Harsin and Bobo have been, goodness gracious, they've been all over him to kind of improve. So I think that they're going to perhaps exceed some expectations, which for them would probably be maybe six wins this year. That should probably be the expectation. I think they could win seven, maybe eight games.
Brandon, you have one-time Tennessee coach Butch Jones at Arkansas State at number nine. How quickly do you think Butch Jones will succeed and maybe compete for conference titles there at Arkansas State?
You know, here's the interesting thing. When people think of Arkansas State from the outside, they think, wow, that team has been very successful in recent years. And that's very true. They've won a couple of Sun Belt titles under Blake Anderson. But here's the thing. They were pretty bad last season. Even with the win at Kansas State, the rest of the season was just kind of a disaster for them. And they had a big-time receiver that really kept them afloat. If they didn't have that, that team would have looked pretty bad if you watched them up close. So if you're an Arkansas State fan that looks at the inner expectations, the expectations would be, well, wow, this is not just we're trying to come off a losing season, but we're also coming in with a new coach and a new philosophy in some ways. But Harsin, you know, I mean, with Butch Jones, he had to go through two offensive coordinators there and end up settling on their previous offensive coordinator. And the previous offensive coordinator there at Arkansas State was pretty successful, except for last season. So I think there's some consistency there. They can come in. I think they'll get to a bowl game. I don't think they'll challenge for the Sun Belt title this year. But when you look at recent history for them, this wasn't a team last year that was built to really contend for a Sun Belt title, despite maybe the outsiders just thinking Arkansas State should maybe be in that conversation every year. I don't think they'll be in the conversation this year, but they'll probably get back up to that area of maybe winning seven or eight games.
Hey, Brandon, thank you so much for joining us. Really do appreciate it. Enjoyed your piece on first-year coaches who you see will be the most successful. And hopefully we'll get a chance to visit with you again sometime in the future.
Thanks, Brandon.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brandon. Brandon Marcello with 247 Sports, their national college football reporter. All right, Tennessee men's tennis, boy, they continue to roll. They won today against South Carolina 4-0. They won the doubles point, and they swept all of the singles matches that they won except for one. So they only lost one set in singles on their way to this 4-0 victory over South Carolina. So they advanced to the finals, a really good showing by Chris Woodruff's team. Tennessee men's golf team did not have a good day today. They ended up shooting 9 over par. They were 3 under par the first day. This is down at Sea Island, and they came back and struggled at 9 over par is where they stand. That's tied with Vanderbilt for 6. That's only 2 shots ahead of South Carolina in the 8th spot. The top 8 advance to the match play. Now, at least they do have a little bit of a cushion over the number 9 spot. Florida and Kentucky are 15 over. Again, Tennessee 9 over, so a 6-shot lead there. Spencer Cross is tied for 4th at 2 under par. He shot a 65 yesterday. He came back with a 73. Everybody else on the Tennessee team is at least plus 3, and nobody else is in the top 20. So not a good day for Tennessee at Sea Island in the second round of the SEC Golf Tournament. But they still should be able to advance to the match play. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Michelle Marciniak. She'll be a part of the Pedal for Alzheimer's, which honors Pat Summitt. So we'll visit with her about that. Also in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll have Mike Murray of the Ice Bears. 5 o'clock, it'll be Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com. And we will hear from some Tennessee folks, football players, assistant coaches, as well as a comment from the head coach, Josh Heupel. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes, Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.